Before we say the refuge prayer, we're going to talk about refuge tonight in some detail. Hopefully you'll find it enlightening. So I just invite people as we say this prayer just to really, you know, be mindful of what we're saying, because we say this a lot and it's easy to kind of just say it and not really. But you're invited to be mindful tonight. Okay? Sangye chudang soki chonam ma jang chubadu dag ni kya suti dagi jin soki biso nangi drola pinche sangye dru parsho.
I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands.
Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratnamanda Buddha Megha Samudra Sapara Samaye Om. Okay, welcome. Sakyapandita's clarifying the sage's intent. In our overview, we talked about spiritual potential, and now we're into the next phase, which is refuge, which is the turning point between being a non-Buddhist and a Buddhist. That's the stepping on the path step. And as we said before, Sakyapandita took a very small section of a Maitreya text called Ornament of the Mahayana Sutras, and he wrote Clarifying the Sage's Intent as a commentary on those other verses. And in doing so, he condensed it slightly from 10 major points to 7. So this is the second major point, which Maitreya called Appreciating Dharma. Sakyapandita called it taking refuge to gain appreciation. There are four subtopics: identifying the essence of taking refuge, determining its nature, the precepts to be observed for taking refuge, and the benefits of following those precepts. So those are the subtopics that we'll be talking about this evening. Regarding the first one, which is the essence of refuge, His Holiness the 42nd Sakyatrizin said that the essence of refuge means wholeheartedly submitting ourselves to the direct guidance of the three jewels. Three jewels, of course, being Buddha, Dharma, and spiritual community. And he said that refuge is our true protection. It is what guides us and saves us. Ape Rimshe, in his commentary, said that the essence is affirming our reliance on the highest objects of refuge. So, in the past, we've talked about this idea that we're caught in samsara. We should really have the attitude, it's like we have a sickness, and the Buddha is the doctor and the Dharma is the medicine. So we're basically admitting where we're at, and we've had all this time beginning this lifetimes, and we're still not enlightened. So we take refuge as an admission that we need some help. with this. And it's something that the Buddhas obviously have already accomplished, so they know how to do it from having done it, and they are willing to teach us. And so we recognize that reality. And that's the thing that distinguishes a Buddhist from a non-Buddhist, basically, in simple terms. In terms of what is the nature of refuge, it's basically divided into mundane and supermundane. So we have two categories regarding the nature of refuge, and those also have subdivisions, of course. The mundane has worldly in mentality and worldly in object. Yeah. And then worldly in object is subdivided into superior and inferior. So what does that mean? A mundane refuge, in terms of the mentality of it, it's because refuge is basically a mental action. Even though we have physical practices, we have prostrations, we have folding our hands and so forth, it's basically a mental practice. So if you have a mundane kind of refuge, which is worldly in mentality, the cause of your refuge is fear and or desire, which are basically two sides of the same coin. You know, I'm either afraid of something or really I want something. You have that mentality for either this life or in a future life. So, for example, you want fame, you want money, you want a long life, you want children, you want a position in society. It's a worldly mentality with a worldly limited time span. You know, I want to be rich now. I don't care about five lifetimes from now. And if you focus your mind on that, it's considered a mundane refuge. In other words, your mental state. You can also have worldly an object, and there's two subdivisions there, superior and inferior. So superior means the three jewels. You can go to refuge for the three jewels, but if your mentality is, I want money, that's a mundane refuge. Or if your mentality is, I want fame, or I want whatever. Even though you're praying to the Buddha, it's still a mundane refuge. Okay? You can also have an inferior object. So an inferior object could be something like a worldly god, or the sun, the moon, the stars, mountains, trees, oceans. There are people that pray to those things. There's nothing wrong with that as such. It's not inherently wrong, but it's a mundane refuge. It's important to realize, though, that it's okay to pay homage, that that's not the same thing as going for refuge. So we were discussing this before class started. There are situations where there are worldly gods, for example, that we pay homage to, or worldly beings that we pay homage to. And that's fine, that's acceptable. We're not holding them as our highest refuge, though. So, for example, we were talking about that today is a day where it's recommended to practice Ganapati practice. Ganapati is a worldly wealth god. It's not an enlightened being. But on certain days, we supplicate for wealth. But you have to have an altruistic motivation for your wealth. It can't just be, well, I want to get rich and then everybody will think of me like, you know, Bill Gates or Elon Musk or somebody. No. It's that I'm going to use the wealth for benefit, for my practice. So there are situations where it's okay to pay homage in those situations, but there's a distinction between that and refuge. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So those are your mundane refuges. Yeah. And then we have super mundane. And there we have common and uncommon. So these refuges are all to the three jewels. But in the common, we have the hearer's refuge and the solitary realizer's refuge. Now, previously we said that in the mundane refuge, the cause was fear and desire. And in the common refuge, we still have that. We do have fear of samsara. That's what renunciation is about. And we also have desires. We desire certain things. So it's not inherently bad, but the main emphasis in the common supramundane is faith. There's a strong aspect of faith in that refuge. So that's what we would call the foundation path, or what I call the foundation path. The purpose is personal liberation. Personal liberation is one of the distinguishing characteristics of the common supramundane refuge. So we have fear, desire, and faith as the causes. And then the time frame is just until the end of this life. It's not until liberation or enlightenment or anything like that. It's just for this lifetime. So that's another characteristic, is the time frame of it. On the uncommon side, we have two subdivisions again, the perfection vehicle and the vajra vehicle. Perfection vehicle is also known as sutrayana or paramitrayana. Those are synonyms. The vajra vehicle is also known as vajrayana or the diamond vehicle. Those are synonyms. I like to use English as much as possible, but you'll see these other terms used probably more often. Now, in the case of the supramundane, in both perfection and vajra vehicles, the purpose is to lead all sentient beings to enlightenment. That's your bodhisattva motivation. It's not just personal liberation, but it's for the sake of all beings. The time frame is until enlightenment. I go for refuge until enlightenment. I go for refuge until I enlightened is the first line of the prayer. So the time frame is extended until enlightenment. And in terms of the cause, we still have fear. We have faith. Fear and desire, faith. But the main cause here is compassion. That's the go-to word in the Bodhisattva path. This is obviously a Mahayana text we're talking about. So compassion is the, if you want to sum it up in one word, the path is compassion. Okay, so we have those other causes, but compassion is the main motivating factor in our taking refuge. That is the map of the six types of refuge, and we won't have a quiz like we used to have quizzes sometimes, but just ask yourself which of the six is clarifying the sage's intent. It's this one, right? Number five. It's the perfection vehicle, because this is not a Vajrayana text, but Vajrayana includes the perfection vehicle. But in terms of this particular text and the type of refuge that is referred to in this text, it's number five. Okay? So that's a little bit more detail in terms of the map of refuge and the different kinds. Make sure I didn't forget anything here. His Holiness the 42nd Sakyatrizin said that when we do the supramundane refuge, we do it for all beings, and we need to make sure that we don't have any exceptions. You cannot leave out somebody that you don't like or that stole money from you or something. It's for all sentient beings. And that motivation, he said, should be true not only for our refuge practice, for all of our practices. Okay. He said, we should really think about this. We should reflect on this. And he said, if you do that, it eliminates anger, hatred, and animosity. So the going for refuge is in itself a practice that gives benefit. And we're going to go into the benefits in a minute. But he said that it eliminates those three delusions. What happens when you go for refuge? Well, lots of things happen. First of all, there are precepts that are to be followed once you have gone for refuge. And there are two main categories of precepts. There are general precepts and there are individual precepts. The general refers to all three jewels. And individual refers to the individual jewels. The general precepts, which apply to all three jewels, there's a number of them. The first one is to always accompany those who are holy. What that means is to stay close to a teacher who has attained some degree of accomplishment and to associate with those who are practicing Dharma. Associate with people who can help you maintain your virtue. Remember last time we talked about the problem with running with the wrong crowd, you get into doing things that you really shouldn't do. So you hang out with holy people, or at least practitioners, hopefully a teacher and a sangha. That's the first general precept. His Holiness 42nd Sakya Treason said, generally speaking, a qualified master is someone who holds the vows, who understands the meaning of the teachings, and knows how to teach them, and who has great compassion. He claims to not be qualified, but I have some doubt about that. I think he's probably qualified. The second precept, general precept, is to study the Noble Dharma teachings. And His Holiness continued in his commentary by saying, we're really fortunate to receive genuine Dharma teaching in such a degenerate time. Remember, this is the Kali Yuga, and the karma's going down. And to run into the Dharma teachings in that type of time frame is really extraordinary. And we should really, you know, appreciate our fortune, our good karma. And he says, studying Dharma is holy because it can lead us to liberation and Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. And it eliminates all obscurations and is the source of all happiness. So there's a saying, you should study the Vinaya teachings on morality, the Sutra teachings on meditation, the Abhidharma teachings on wisdom. And that basically means those are the three main topics that are considered study topics. So morality, obviously, is the basis for everything. You can't be a holy person if you're an immoral person. And then you need to learn how to meditate. If you're going to be a Buddhist, you have to learn how to meditate, right? And then the wisdom teachings. So we have morality, compassion, and wisdom. So those are, generally speaking, three major areas of study. And then, in addition, he said, you should study some of the great acknowledged masters like Nagarjuna, Maitreya, Asanga, Dharmakirti, Virupa, Shantideva, and so on. So a lot of those teachers we've talked about in here and quoted them quite a bit. And then he said, if you have empowerments for Vajrayana, you need to study the four different classes of Tantra. Previously, we talked about what is valid teaching and what isn't, so I don't think we need to go into that again. So that's the second general precept. The third general precept is to practice the teachings according to what the Buddha taught. He said that in general, it means to act in conformity with the three divisions of Scripture, which we just named, morality, meditation, and wisdom. In particular, the way of accomplishing those activities. And again, he repeated this saying that your conduct should be according to the Vinaya, your meditation according to the sutras, your expositions according to the Abhidharma, and your mantrayana according to the tantras. But whatever practice you do, it needs to be what the Buddha taught. And we talked last time also about, you know, making sure that you've examined the teacher, because there's a lot of teachers out there, and you want to make sure that you get a good one. Because as we saw in the story, you can be misled. If the teacher's got it wrong, they can take you down the wrong path. In regard to the particular way of accomplishing the practices, His Holiness the 42nd Sakya Treason said, we can divide activities into virtuous, non-virtuous, and neutral. He put a lot of emphasis on the neutral activities and converting neutral activities into virtuous activities. There's lots of different examples in different texts about how to do that. We've talked about that a little bit. And he said that the way to do that is that neutral actions can be transformed into virtuous actions if we carry them out with the right perception. So he gave an example which is actually a pretty amazing teaching, and it has to do with where you are in your environment or where you're going in your environment. For example, if you're just sitting, your perception should be, according to him, according to this practice, is I'm relying on the three jewels. It's to have that mindfulness, that memory, that remembering that, yeah, I need the help of the three jewels. I'm relying on them. That's what refuge means. So if you're just sitting, you need to, or you can, remember that, and that in itself is a practice. Now, if you're going somewhere, if you're not sitting, if you're moving, we need to think about going for refuge in a specific way. For example, if you're just going to be moving around in a central location, say, you know, in your neighborhood or in your town, somewhere relatively where you live, you should think about going to refuge to Vairochana. Vairochana is a white Buddha, and in this system he is centrally located. And so if you're moving around in your area, you want to be thinking, again, this is a mental practice, I go for refuge to Vairochana. If you go to an eastern direction, you should do the same thing, but to the Buddha Akshopya. Akshopya is a blue Buddha, and these Buddhas are all the head of families, what they call Buddha families, okay? And all the different deities and Buddhas that we have, like Tara and Manjushri and all these, they are members of these various families, okay? Akshopya is called the immovable Buddha because it doesn't matter what happens, he never gets angry. Nobody bothers him. You can cut him off in traffic, he doesn't care. So he's immovable. He's the solid blue color, and he has that quality. So if you would like to develop that quality, you go to refuge to Akshopya. On the other hand, if you're going to the south, you go for refuge to Ratnasambhava, who is yellow or golden. That practice has to do with abundance and riches and fullness, and thus the yellow color. If you're going to the west, you go for refuge to Buddha Amitabha, who's red in color, the Buddha of love. Chenrezig, the Buddha of compassion, is in that family, for example. If you're going to the north, you take refuge in Buddha Moggachari, who's green. Green is the color of activity. It's an activity Buddha. If you're wanting to practice activities of certain kinds, you can go for refuge to that Buddha Moggachari. And you'll notice that the prayer flags have these colors too. Today is a special day to hang prayer flags if you have any. When we do this practice of going for refuge to these Buddhas, we pray to these Buddhas, and doing that we develop faith and devotion in these Buddhas. And if you do that well and enough, there are certain benefits that accrue. For example, it pacifies temporal obstacles. So if you're going to make a trip somewhere in a certain direction, like I just went to Toronto, I went east, I said that prayer, and it removes the obstacles in your trip, for your trip. And it allows you to fulfill your wishes. This is true for any of these Buddhas we're talking about here. And eventually, if you do this practice enough, you will actually encounter these Buddhas. You will see them and talk to them and say whatever you want to say when you meet the Buddha. So this is what happens when you have very intense practice, very deep devotion. The veils of obscuration are removed. Because these Buddhas are around us all the time anyway. We just don't see them because we're obscured. But these practices remove those veils. And of course, you get to that point, all kinds of benefits can happen. So there are some other practices in these texts. So I thought we might look at a couple of them here. Let's see. This is a commentary by His Holiness 42nd Saikitrizin. This is a brand new book, by the way. Sakyapandita himself, in his texts, gives a bunch of different ways to make food offerings. Because we eat all the time, this is convenient, because we're doing it every day anyway. And if you get in the habit of making a food offering every time you eat, over time you can accumulate a massive amount of merit. And he lists a bunch of special mantras according to the food offering practice that you choose to do. And I'm in the process of having these printed up for you, folks. Next time I will hopefully have them for you. I was hoping to have them tonight, but I don't. Because they're all in Sanskrit, of course. But you'll have the Sanskrit mantras soon. Now, there's a particular practice, food offering practice, which we mentioned once before, but we'll go through it again here. And this comes out of the sutras. It comes directly from the Buddha. When the Buddha was on the earth 2,600 years ago, and teaching, he was approached by a yakshini, a female, some people translate it as a demon, I'm not sure that's exactly right, but a being. And this being was really in distress because she had a compulsion. During the day, she was very loving to children, and during the night, she ate them. Mm-hmm. And she was really upset that she had this compulsion, and she didn't know how to control it. She didn't know what to do about it. So she went to the Buddha and said, please, help me. Her name is Hariti, yeah. And in Tibetan, that's Trogma. So the Buddha said, yes, we will help you. And so he told all of his disciples to offer a lump of dough squeezed in the palms of their hands, saying Om Harite Soha, and saying Om Harite Vajrayakshini Soha, and to make that offering every meal. That needed to be the first portion of your food. And so he got all his followers to say that. There's another mantra that goes with that, Om Ragapinda Asibaya Soha. And it's the story is recounted in the sutra called the Sutra of Hariti. And the Buddha said, may those who accept me as a teacher bestow squeezed lumps of food on the Yakshini Hariti. And it's also mentioned in the Vajrapik Tantra, to offer this squeezed lump of dough as an offering in the first portion of food. And it's also taught in some other sutras and tantras, such as the Kalachakra Tantra. So this is one of the food offerings you can do, and then these other ones with these mantras, which I haven't got printed up yet, but I'll give them to you. But basically, if you get in the habit of making food offerings, as I said before, because we're eating every day, it becomes kind of a routine practice that you can use to accomplish a lot of merit, converting a neutral activity into a meritorious activity. And there's lots of other ones, these practices of converting neutral activities For example, when you go to sleep, there is a practice you can do. This is according to 42nd Sakyatrizin, that when you are about to go to sleep, you should think, may we attain the Dharmakaya of the Buddha for the sake of all sentient beings. Or alternatively, may all sentient beings attain the state of Dharmakaya. So this is a falling asleep practice, not to be confused with a sleeping practice or a dream yoga practice, which are different. But that's a very simple practice that you can do. In Sakyapandita's text, he makes reference to Shantideva's text, A Guide to Entering the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, in which it says, lie down in the desired direction of the position of the Lord when he passed into nirvana. You've maybe seen the lying Buddha statues, but some of the statues are not exactly correct. So, for example, this one here, the Buddha's like this, and that looks like he's watching Netflix. Okay, he's not really in that position for this practice. This practice is for falling asleep and also for death and dying. So, just to clarify what the actual position is, you're on your right side. You take your right thumb, you put it behind your earlobe. There's a chakra there. And then, if you can, you block with your little finger your right nostril. And you're lying on your right side. And this left hand is on your... Okay.
You go to sleep like that?
You go to sleep like that. With practice, if you're not used to it. I used to sleep on my left side before this. I had to switch over to my right side. But if you do it, eventually you get comfortable with it. The reason for that, basic reason for that, is you have internal energy channels, and by doing this posture, you block the channel that runs your discursive thought patterns.
Oh, that's cool.
Have you ever gone to bed and not gone to sleep because you were running discursive thought patterns? Lama Yeshe said, one sleepless night is enough. Okay. So this is helpful for that, although it's not the main purpose, but it does have that effect. And by cutting down your discursive thought pattern, then you can then do your practice with your mind. Whatever your practice is, your falling asleep practice, and there's various ones. Sakyapandita continues and he says, then, composing yourself in the meditative absorption of Amitabha, lie down to rest in the Dharma body of the Buddha, the condition of emptiness. So you go to sleep in emptiness. This is just one of many ways of doing it, okay? And then, when you wake up, the practice is to wake up in the Rupakaya, or the form body of the Buddha. So you wake up and you immediately think, oh, I'm a Buddha. Because we have Buddha nature, right? We're just obscured. So it's a way of converting your ordinary vision into a pure kind of vision, into, you know, I'm Buddha and everybody else is Buddha. And then you go and you do the conduct of your virtuous activities. So that's a kind of three-step practice that you can do. And then Sakyapandita says, if you have a pleasurable activity or experience or a happy experience, you offer it to your preceptor in the three jewels. So you don't just keep it to yourself. Yeah? You offer it, you make it as an offering. But if you have a painful experience, or you have an unhappy experience, then what do? You renew your refuge in the three jewels. Okay? So in either case, you're including your connection with the three jewels. So now, if you get sick, Sakyapandita says, you should apply yourself to the recitation of mantras, meditative visualizations, medical treatments, and the reading of scriptures. Do not disparage these means, for they are all branches of the jewel of the Dharma. Remember, Dharma is not books. It's experiences, it's realizations. You know, the books just describe it. You should do all those things if you're sick. And then, in the book, he puts a possible objection. texts sometimes do that. They anticipate objections and then they answer them. So the objection that he anticipates is this. Some people say that to resort to medical treatment and the recitation of scriptures is not to trust in the Dharma jewel, and that it's better to take refuge in the three jewels than it is to take medicine. They even say that it harms your refuge to take medicine. This is the objection, okay? And then the reply from Sakik Pandita says, yet the Buddha taught in the medicine section of the Vinaya scriptures that monks, or meaning all of us really, should have recourse to doctors and medicine, because even food and drink can be medicine. If food and drink are detrimental to taking refuge, since the Buddha taught that food and drink belong to one of the four main classes of medicine, hence, as long as you continue to eat and drink, how could it be right to say that ingesting medicine injures your refuge? In other words, it doesn't make sense. And then he says, if real scholars witness this, they would view it with disapproval. So, go to your medical practitioner, whomever you choose or whatever system you like, and take the medicine and you will not damage your refuge. But, I think from experience I can say that mantras are a very powerful tool, and all these other practices that he suggested are to be added on to your medicine, to your prescription, okay? So that's something that sometimes people say that, well, aren't your mantras strong enough? You have to take medicine and vitamins and stuff too? You might hear that. And then he says, furthermore, do not renounce the three jewels for anything, even to save your life or for some reward. Train in making each and every act a service to the three jewels. Those are the general precepts for all three jewels together. Now, there are individual precepts for the individual three jewels. Starting with the jewel of the Buddha, Sakyabandita says, if you take refuge in the Buddha, do not take refuge in some other god as the great teacher. We've already talked about that. It's okay to give homage to gods and beings and things, but that's different than taking refuge. So you don't want to take refuge in another deity if you take refuge in the Buddha. Continue, if you have taken refuge in the Dharma, the precept is to not harm sentient beings. And if you take refuge in the Sangha, you should not take a non-Buddhist as your spiritual preceptor. So we talked about this last time too. You got to be careful about who you take as your teacher or your preceptor. And then the 42nd Sakyatrisa, to repeat it again, he said, you can pay respect to other traditions or gods, but you should not take refuge in them. He said, regarding the Dharma, the actual Dharma is the realizations. The texts just describe the realizations. So, but in any case, you should never place a text on the floor or step over it. Should always put it up in an elevated place. And when you study a Dharma text, he said, you should realize that it's very different than studying a regular subject like geography or history or something like that, language, because Dharma study brings happiness and can eventually bring enlightenment, as well as it helps us to deal with life's challenges. Just in case you have any. You never know when you might need that. Okay. And he really emphasizes studying a lot. He said, if you don't study Dharma, you can't practice it properly. You don't know how to do it correctly. I think we saw that in the Four Attachments course, that it's really easy to not practice correctly, and you can end up really actually hurting your practice. So it's important to study and learn how to do it correctly. And His Holiness also said that we should focus on whatever teachings are most pertinent for us. Geshe Tashi Namo used to say, take a look at yourself and find out what your worst obstacle or obscuration is, and start with that one. Zongtso Kinze Rinpoche said, find one or two practices that you really like and do those. When you first start out, you won't do them completely correctly, but that's okay, eventually you will. And then you'll have practices that you like to do. It's not really realistic to do practice out of obligation. That usually doesn't work. But if you really like it, you want to do it, that's different. So that's something you should look for. Find out something that you can relate to, that works for you, that you need, that's pertinent. So I think that's pretty good advice. And then he repeats again, the texts merely describe the Dharma, they're not the actual Dharma itself. The realization or understanding of the Buddha's teaching is the actual Dharma. In other words, true Dharma refers to the inner qualities we gain through practice. This is not found on paper. It's in our mind. Outer Dharma, including Dharma in the form of books, is support. If we do all this, what are the benefits? We have temporary benefits and we have ultimate benefits. His Holiness the 42nd Saikitrizin says that the benefit of taking refuge is that it has the excellent quality of separating us from our faults. Which I thought was kind of a nice way to say it. So regarding temporary benefits, Sakyapandita says that if you take refuge, obviously this means correctly, take refuge correctly, it frees you from undesirable things. It purifies obscurations created by past acts of misdirected faith. So specifically, you avoid harm from other humans and from demons. You minimize your pain and your mental suffering. And it removes your unfavorable factors and conditions. And the 42nd Saikitrizin said that the refuge practice is very powerful, and even merely reciting the formula of it brings benefit. I assume he means with less than 100% mindfulness. But it still brings benefit. That practice is so powerful. And we have a story in Apai Rinpoche's book to illustrate. So let's see what Apai Rinpoche says. Angelo, would you like to be the reader?
Sure.
It starts at the bottom down there.
What do you want me to read till? Just the bottom
to the end of the chapter. It's two pages.
Okay.
You want somebody else to read it?
I'll go for it here. A temporary benefit of taking refuge in the Triple Gem is being able to dispel the various obscurations to overcome or at least reduce the sufferings.
To overcome or at least reduce the sufferings of body and mind, and to avoid being harmed by other people or even by harmful spirits. There is a story which illustrates how neither other people nor spirits can harm one who has taken refuge. At one time, there was a very old man who became a monk. Although he possessed no knowledge of the doctrine, one day a woman made him an offering of a beautiful piece of cloth with a request for him to give Dharma teachings to her. The old monk was very embarrassed because he did not know any Dharma. However, because he had accepted the cloth, he had to say something. Thinking out loud, he said, "It is because of my ignorance that I am suffering." The woman interpreted what he had said as, "Due to the cause of ignorance, all sufferings arise in the world." She reflected carefully on the monk's words and concluded that what he had said was very wise. Through meditating further on these words, she acquired understanding of the truth of suffering, the first of the Four Noble Truths, and achieved a great result. This piece of cloth soon became quite famous. At one point, a thief heard about it and decided to steal it. He went to the monk's house and stood at the door, asking for the cloth. The old monk was afraid to go out. So he instructed the thief that if he wanted the piece of cloth, he should go to the side window. So the thief went to the side window, stuck his hand through it, and said, "Now give me that cloth." The old monk replied, "When this piece of cloth was given to me, it was given with two hands. So if you want to take it, you should put both hands through the window, and then I will give it to you." When the thief put both his hands through the window, the monk caught hold of them, bound them with a rope, and tied them to a pillar inside the house. Then he went outside, picked up a stick, and started beating the thief very hard, one stroke for each line of the refuge formula. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. When he stopped, the thief's legs were badly hurt, he was in great pain. Then the old monk let him loose, and the thief ran away, limping from the pain of his beating. Someone saw him running and asked him why he was limping. The thief replied that he had been trying to steal a piece of cloth from an old monk who caught him and beat him up. And while beating him, the old monk had recited the refuge formula. So he said that Buddha must be very great indeed, because he had managed to condense the entire refuge prayer into three lines. Otherwise, he would surely have been dead by now. This thief lived under a bridge which many spirits used to cross every night. One night, when these spirits arrived at the bridge, they found they could not get over. There was a strong force holding them back. Curious to find out what was happening, they began to search around. After a while, they discovered the thief under the bridge, mumbling to himself. He told them he was reciting the prayer of taking refuge in the triple gem. The spirits decided that since this triple gem was powerful enough to prevent them from crossing the bridge, they would take refuge also. It is said that these spirits were later reborn in the higher realms. As to the thief, his faith in the triple gem was reconfirmed, and later he took full ordination. Through taking refuge, not only do we overcome harm, we also gain many positive qualities. For example, when we become Buddhists, we attain the qualities of being Buddhist. Our lives become holy and purposeful. By taking the proper refuge and becoming holy people, we become worthy to receive offerings from gods and humans who appreciate Dharma. We will receive protection wherever we are. We will always have the triple gem with us as we pass through life, and be content and confident in any situation which arises. We will not be separated from the triple gem in this life or in future lifetimes. These are the temporary benefits of taking refuge. As to the ultimate benefits of taking refuge, by taking refuge in the Buddha, we will be able to gain Buddhahood ourselves. By taking refuge in the Dharma, we will be able to teach the Dharma to others. And by taking refuge in the Sangha, we will have many beings gathered to receive teachings from us when we attain Buddhahood. Both those who come to us for teachings and those we seek out in order to teach will benefit, because our teachings will help them gain the stage of full and perfect enlightenment. With regards to the etymological meaning, the Sanskrit words saranam gacchami mean I go for refuge. It is refuge because it protects. One goes because one approaches in order to take refuge.
Thank you, Nicole. So that's a little story about the refuge. Recitation itself has power, even if it's part of a robbery. There are some more benefits to list, but I think we'll stop there for this evening. Are there any questions about any of this?
I guess maybe just one. I guess I'm a little confused myself when it comes to, like, if we're, each one of us is a Buddha, right? Why do we, yeah, just to say prayers, for example, or to, like, towards Buddhas, does that accumulate merit if you were yourself already one? It's sort of thinking, it seems to me that if you're kind of reciting things for merit, it seems like it's kind of outside of you to some extent. It seems confusing to me.
Yeah, we need to be careful with our words as always, and so we can't really say we are Buddhas.
Mm.
We have Buddha nature.
Mm. Okay.
We have the potential, but we haven't actualized it. We haven't removed the obscurations which prevent us from actualizing it. So we can say, I have Buddha nature, I'm aspiring to Buddhahood, I'm practicing to Buddhahood, but I haven't achieved it yet. Whereas Shakyamuni Buddha and the other Buddhas that have achieved it, they can say, I'm a Buddha, even though there's no I when you're a Buddha. But you know what I mean? It isn't like we're there yet. We still have this path to traverse. Then we will actualize the potential that Buddha nature is. Does that answer you?
I hear what you're saying. I think I'll have to, like, sleep on it.
Okay.
Like, I got it. It's just...
We can talk about this some more if we need to. Are there any other questions? All right. So, as always, we start our practice with refuge. We have our main practice. In this case, it was listening and studying. And then we end with dedication. So let's say our dedication prayer here. So nam de ye tam je zi pa ni tom na ne be da nam pam je te ke ga na chi ba lung tu pe ye sit pe so le do a du war shu chang du zem jo vim po che Ma ke panam ke gyurche ke manam parme paryam gong ne gong tu pel parsho jam pao pao ji tar ken padam kundu sang po de yang de jin te De da gungi jesu da lo chir Ge wa di da tam che rab du nu Du su che pi gya wa tam che ki Nu a gang la cho tu nga pa gi Dakshin ge re tsa wa di kun kyaun Sang po cho che ra du nu war gi Chak sa da dang cho ching sha pa dang Jesu ye rang gu shing so wa yi Ge wa chung ze da gi ji sat pa Tam che zog pe jang chu che By this merit may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen. May it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I may train to be like them. Through this dedication, praised as supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.